Welcome all once again to Duel with an episode 117. We're coming to you live from the Evo finale, which we're not watching because Martin hates Smash Brothers and all that's fun and good in the world. Before we get there, let's introduce our panel of fighting game experts. We have Phil.
Hey everybody, Steam sale's happening, get out your wallet.
And we have Martin.
Hi, I all have already spent some money on Steam sales.
What have you bought on Steam so far?
I have bought Duke Nukem 3D Megaton Edition.
How much was that?
It was €3 something.
Okay.
I also bought Stealth Bastard Deluxe Edition. I also bought Expedition Conquistador and something else, but I'm right now not remembering. So it already begins.
And that's actually a good place to start because, I mean, technically we didn't announce this last week, but originally this was supposed to be our backlog week where we went and played through our backlog of games, or played through a title in our backlog to talk about this week. But the Steam sale was announced like Tuesday or Wednesday, so I decided we would wait until the damage was done and everybody's wallet was safe, and then you'd pick a game from your backlog or a new game that you purchased on the Steam sale and play through it, or play some of it, and we'll talk about that next week. So.
I can already talk about one thing that I have played.
Okay.
But it wasn't on a sale, but it basically came out relatively recently, and that is the Shadow Warrior Deluxe Edition, which is the game the Duke Nukem guys made after Duke Nukem 3D from 1997. But with a new engine, and it has the main game and also all the expansions in it. And I have to say, for all the bitching about current first-person shooters, for most part, the bitching is justified. I had so much fun playing this game. I actually already finished it. I went through all the levels, and it's just incredibly fun to not have levels that are just go from point A to point B. And sometimes people say like these games were basically nothing but mazes. Shadow Warrior actually isn't like that. I mean, the second expansion actually feels more like that, but the original game and the first expansion are actually quite straightforward, not that maze-like, and quite fun. The only problem I actually have with the game is, and I think I also mentioned it on Twitter, is if you play it now, you realize the game is incredibly racist. I mean,
racist to what race? Like
probably the Chinese and the Japanese.
I see.
I mean, you play the character named Lo Wang, and of course, funny Chinese name, Wang, so of course, lots of penis jokes. He has the most offensive, how do you say, I mean, when he talks, he has
accent?
Most offensive accent ever. I mean, if you can imagine how an offensive Chinese accent would sound like, that's exactly how it is in this game. Then the game makes, I mean, there's just so much stuff. I mean, you get extra health from, bonus health from finding fortune cookies, but fortune cookies are not actually Chinese at all. They're just something I think you in the US made up. They're not Chinese at all. Then there's like stuff like he's supposed to be Chinese, but then at some points, I mean, he uses a katana, then he says stuff like Banzai and Sayonara, which of course is Japanese, so I think the people who made the game have actually no idea what Chinese and Japanese was at any point or given time.
It seems like that would be part of the joke, just to mix it all up.
I don't know. It just comes up, like, incredibly offensive.
I can see your offensive. I would say it's more stereotypical. It just seems like, okay, you know what, we have... Like, sometimes people are just like, okay, you know what, Japan, Asia, Chinese, all the same people, so we'll just kind of lump them all with these stereotypes and we'll just throw it out there and put it into this game. So it's maybe somebody with a passing idea of, like, Japanese and Chinese customs and cultures who's like, okay, this is what they do because I've seen it on TV.
Yeah, maybe. But, like I said, playing it, it just comes... It just seems very offensive. I don't know. It doesn't feel right. At least not at this point.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about the other stuff I bought. I tried out a couple of things, but... like I said, we wanted to do that next week, so...
Did anybody pick up the... Or did anybody get a chance to pick up Metro Exodus for a penny?
No, I did not.
Really? That was something they...
Was that a Steam thing? Or an Amazon thing?
It was a Best Buy price mistake, apparently.
Oh, Best Buy. That's why I have no idea.
Yeah, some people got it, some people didn't. I got it. I got a code, so it should work. I know I'm not even going to try to make my computer run it without like it crying in pain. But,
I mean,
yeah.
It wouldn't probably not run on my machine that great either, but... I mean, for a penny, I would try.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I got the game. I mean, like, even if I get a computer that works sometime in the future, it's a game that I have for a penny, and it's a very good, well-reviewed game. So
I really liked Metro 2033. So yeah.
So yeah, that was my. I'm doing my best to not pay attention to the Steam sale. Because I figured if I don't pay attention to it, I can't buy anything and spend.
Right.
So, yeah, I've just been keeping my head in the sand, hoping that nothing tempts me, because it's really hard. I can avoid Steam easily. It's and everybody else tweets about these deals.
Yeah.
I think I've been tweeting a couple of things.
Oh, everybody tweets about it. I think it started on Thursday, and the Steam sale was trending worldwide on Twitter.
Not too much surprise, to be honest.
No, I mean...
So I bought a bunch of stuff before the Steam sale happened, like, almost right before. Like, I bought Rogue Legacy and Bleed and Skulls of the Shogun. I went on a little buying spree, and then the Steam sale happened, and I was like, man...
couple of those games will probably not have a huge sale. Like, Rogue Legacy, I don't expect to be have anything at all. At least not meaningful. Yeah.
Oh, and I bought Dust and Elysian Tail before the Steam sale as well.
So. That might actually get a sale.
Yeah.
Well, that's not going to help him. I was going to say, there was Dorky, I think, did a comic about the difference between a normal sale and a Steam sale.
Yeah, I saw that. That's pretty good. Yeah.
It seems very accurate, too.
So I'm thinking about buying Hitman Absolution that's on right now for like $12.
I didn't like it much.
For $12, I mean, is it that bad?
Yeah, well, like, I think I mentioned on the podcast, I think it's half good.
So that's why he's paying, like, what is that, like, 10%, I mean, that's like, what, 80% off?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's 50 75, or 85,
I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I'll probably get that. I have like 24 hours to make up my mind on that one. But,
if you can make up your mind, because it seems like a lot of times it's been dead as well.
Right.
Yeah. It's
better now. But
I've played most of the games that they have on sale, so that is a deterrent to not buy anything. When it's like, oh, man.
The deterrent is I've already owned it.
Yeah. Or I've already like played the shit out of it. Like there are some great deals, like, you know, Borderlands 2 and all the stuff, but I'm like, no, I don't. Don't really want it, because I've played a lot of it.
Yeah, and I just bought Borderlands 2 on my 360 before that went south. Which I am actually going to try to fix this week, so that should be a fun report to come back with next week about my recently really broken 360.
Yeah. Yeah, this weekend has just been all Steam games for me. I've finally cracked over. I don't know if I mentioned this, but I did get my gaming laptop back, so I've been playing a bunch of Steam games this week. So I played Dust, an Elysian Tale, and Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed. Rogue Legacy, I played a bunch of, and Sonic Generations, I've been jumping back into.
What are your thoughts? Oh, have you played Sonic Generations before?
Yeah, I bought it on Steam a long time ago, and I played only like an hour of it, maybe like months and months ago. But now I'm like back into it for reals this time. So.
And what are your thoughts on it? Is it enjoyable?
Yeah, it's fun. It's pretty great. It is very insane. Like, the level design, something crazy is always happening. Like, you're just going off, like, I don't know. The level design is so crazy. And, like, helicopters are taking you places, and this crazy stuff is happening. And then you have challenge stuff in every level, and the boss stages are weird. But it's really fun. I love the contrast between the 2D and the 3D. And the 3D stuff is pretty fun, I find, as well. Yeah, I have no problems with it so far. So.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about, since you have quite the power and I got nothing?
Me or Mark?
One thing I can say, I'm actually currently running the Duke Nukem Megaton Edition, and it's kind of funny to play a game like this right now, because I actually have like the FPS counter running at the lower third, and it says right now I'm running the game at 1,300 something frames per second.
I don't even know what you would need that for, but...
Amazing. I don't know. When you played back in the day, I can tell you it wasn't that smooth. But yeah, one game I kind of want to mention, because I only bought it because I thought it looked interesting. And that is the game I mentioned earlier, which is called Expeditions? I'm not quite sure right now. I think Expedition Conquistador, which is a strategy role-playing game set in the in like where was it 1580 something, where and you are part of the Spanish army going to South America and fighting against the Maya and stuff. And I just bought it basically because strategy RPG is already interesting for me, and I just thought that's a very unique scenario to have for a role-playing game. But because usually you have fantasy or science fiction, you rarely get a historical scenario. And I played a bit of it, and it's actually really cool because they have a really nice conversation system also in there with. Like when you played like the old Infinity Engine games, when basically you have like stats like diplomacy and stuff, and then maybe you can get out of fights by being very diplomatic with the natives, but then you also have a problem because your party members, some of them might be very racist, which is actually a stat, racist. So if you're nice to the natives, they don't like you that much. But if you're horrible to them, they like you more. And
seems like messed up priorities.
A very interesting game so far. I'm looking forward to play more of it.
Okay. Phil?
Yeah?
What do you
go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what do you have for us? Or anything else you have?
Just the Steam stuff. Sonic Racing Transformed seems extremely fun. It looks really nice on the PC as well. A lot of kart racers seem to be either a hit or a miss. Like, I didn't really like Mod Nation Racers or Little Big Planet Karting, but like Sonic, this game is a great kart racer. And Rogue Legacy is great. We talked about it a lot last podcast. But yeah, I'm enjoying that as well. And Dust seems really good. Dust is the one that I played the least out of all the games that I mentioned for Steam so far, but that game is great. There's a little character called Fidget. She kind of annoys me as a sidekick character. And, like, the main characters themselves I don't think are animated well, but, like, the environments and everything that's happening, like, the sprites are really good. And I do like a good talking sword in a video game, so that's
yes.
Great. but I'm enjoying Dust as well. I can't wait to jump into that. So I'm going to have to, like, I kind of just want to keep playing all these Steam games that I have installed on my PC, but I also want to just, like, focus on, like, one or two and make sure that I beat them before moving on.
You should totally finish Dust, because
yeah,
the story is actually quite good.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Oh, did you actually finish it since the last time we spoke?
I played Dust on the 360, so it was actually on my Game of Year list last year.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. And then throughout the week, it's been non-games. I started the Kirby collection with a buddy. We're going to go through that collection, and I showed them Game & Wario as well, and they thought it was a blast. But yeah.
You still remain, like, the only person I know who's extremely positive on that game.
Man, that game is awesome. It is so insane and random. Like, it's crazy. It's just like Wario games. And, like, every game, like, it's not all micro games, but every game is, like, a full sort of game with, like, different levels. And
a mini game.
Yeah. every mini game in the game is like its own sort of full thing, with different levels and challenges and stuff like that. And then you have all these weird things that you can unlock, which is also, like, it's not just, you know, like artwork there is no artwork. Everything that you unlock is like a gameplay mechanic that you can sort of just like mess around with. And they don't give you instructions on how to use it. They're just like, all right, here, figure it out. This is like a cool little thing. Some things are just like talking to your gamepad and it'll pitch up or down your voice or just weird stuff. Talk, like, say words into this dog's ear and then the dog will make commands at this army of pets, or you can just like sandbox roam around this land with like toy cars. It's completely weird and great. Yeah. Still like that game.
Yeah.
And it has awesome multiplayer stuff. Like, it has pretty much Pictionary, where you're drawing the gamepad, they have to guess, and then, you know, they guess correctly, you say correct or pass, and that's been extremely fun playing with my friends. And then there's, like, sort of a Nintendo Land asymmetrical style of gameplay where you're trying to steal fruit on screen, and your friend has to try to figure out. It, you know what? It kind of reminds me of Assassin's Creed, the online multiplayer.
I don't think that's a comparison many people would have seen coming.
No.
Like, you're trying to figure out who the thief is, but there's other palettes that are the same as you, and you have to try to blend in with the crowd, so you have to try to mimic their movements so you don't look suspicious and stuff like that. And then at the end of the game, they have to figure out which model of sprite you were, and that's pretty cool, too. But yeah, it's great fun.
Okay.
What about you, Earl? Games.
Also, I just want to say, I want to hear Phil say figure out as much as possible, because that's the most Canadian he always sounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it the out part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I said before, I don't play games anymore. I just kind of comment on them. Like, I'm really just kind of, I'm still working my way through New Super Mario Bros. U, just going after the Star Coins.
Right.
and I'm sure I played some demos this week. Like, really, most of my gaming was done, like, out of my recent games that I bought on the 360. So, like, my Mass Effect progress was halted, my Injustice progress is going nowhere, I didn't start Tomb Raider, I just got Borderlands 2, so a lot of that stuff was really shot to shit when my 360 broke, so that's one of the reasons I'm even thinking about fixing this, is because I have so much invested into it recently as far as games go. I still want
to
try.
More fun to just, like, you know, read up on news and talk about them than it is play them. But
yeah, I'm actually not. It's just really sometimes, I honestly speaking, I just kind of get distracted. I just find it so much easier in the summer sometimes to just, like, watch a movie or shows and stay under the AC or a fan or something to keep cool. I know it's no different than playing video games, but at least I can just kind of lay down and do nothing while it's happening. I mean, I guess I could play Rise and do the same thing when that comes out. But, I will say this much, and we've had this discussion for the last 3 weeks. I'm going through New Super Mario Bros. U for the Star Coins and the Hidden Exits. I think it's a much better design game than New Super Mario U. And I know some people are 50-50 on the Star Coins because it does add a difficulty, but it means that they can get away with making the core game a bit easier because they have this added challenge. But I do like the concept of kind of going through stages and, you know, getting these jumps and finding all these hidden exits for a reason. And, you know, eventually you do open up this special world when you collect all of them and stuff like that. And then nice enough that, you know, you can know there's three. You kind of have an idea of, I wish they would kind of mix it up. I know it would be defeat the purpose if they numbered them. Because, you know, like, if you get three and you have one, you know, you miss two. So you can just kind of figure out where in the stage it should be and stuff like that. Instead of, like, Ghost House, for example, are a good place where you can just kind of mess up the order to really screw somebody's head.
What do you mean? Like, they are kind of numbered. Like, it'll tell you which, like, if you got the third coin first, it'll tell you that you got the third coin.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I wish they wouldn't do that.
Oh, you wish they wouldn't do that. Oh, okay.
In certain stages, because, like, you can get the third coin, so you naturally assume that the second coin was before that, but let's say you get the third coin in a ghost house, and that's actually, like, the first coin. You know, like, the ghost house takes the message of house. And I still hold, since Super Mario World, that whoever designed ghost house hate people, because...
Yeah, ghost houses are the worst. Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Yeah, but that's, like, the game to me, is collecting the star coins, or in Star Collecting Mario's, getting all of the stars and secret stuff. Like, that there is no other game for me than that. Like, I don't understand the notion of just, like browsing, like, going through the levels and just, like, beating the game. Yeah, that's, like...
Well, I'm half and half. I prefer just going through the game once and beating it so I know everything it has. And then I'll just kind of go through a second time and play clean up because, yeah, part of the challenge is the Star Coin, finding all the exits.
Right.
And, you know, completing those secret stages. It does add a nice element to it where it's kind of like, you know, you can beat this game. It gets more difficult throughout the second half of the game, but it's not something that's going to break you. And then it's like, if you want a real challenge, try to get these Star Coins. I mean,
I can't move forward if I don't get the Star Coins. But it's not like the whole drive me crazy thing where, like, it's a perfectionist, and because I can't get this, then I just stop playing the game altogether. Because I don't find the Star Coins that challenging that it stops me from playing the game, but it's challenging enough that I am able to be like, all right, I'm not, like, progressing unless I get these coins, but it usually doesn't take too long to get them, so it doesn't, like, halt the progress.
Yeah, and part of the reason I also prefer doing it after the game is because the New Super Mario series still has that weird thing where you can only save after castles and airships, so this...
Yeah. You can just beat that level again. And
yeah, I know. But this way, it's just kind of like, okay, I'll just go through a stage, I'll get the Star Coins, and then I can save. I don't have to worry about, like, playing through four stages more or replaying the castle I just came out of.
Right.
You know, and granted, at that point, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I've had, like, 99 lives for about, I should say, half the game at this rate, and it doesn't really deplete, and if it does, you get them really quickly back anyhow.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, I was just saying, I do think it's a better game, especially because New Super Luigi U kind of ties the Star Coins into the level design because it's, you know, it has to put everything out there because it's a much snappier thing where Mario is allowed to play with the level design, hide it in more, obvious faces, I should say.
in Super Luigi U, there's even it makes even less sense to not get the star coins.
Yeah,
because the levels are so short, it's just like why are you playing these levels if you're not getting the star coins?
Yeah, so there you go. So I guess we can scoot over to news. It's actually been a pretty decent week of news. I guess we should start with two corporate shuffles. First off, Capcom has laid off people. We didn't get an exact number for that, right? We just know that their VP of American...
They only know that they're laying off people and that the U.S., what is he, president?
I think he's the VP.
VP, okay. That he is leaving, but he's doing that voluntarily. At least that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
You never know with a Japanese company.
It's always easy to fan the American branches.
Yeah.
And I assume we're going to see more of that later on this year when the Austin 3 comes out. And that's out next month, right? Or...
Not sure.
Maybe?
As you can see, we're so excited for Lost Planet 3 as we have.
I don't expect Lost Planet 3 to do any numbers.
No, I don't either, but that's Capcom's big game for the year. That's what they're
wanting.
Yeah.
I've never played any Lost Planets. Like, I played a demo of, I think, the first one a long time ago, but that's
same
year.
I own the first one, I think. I haven't beaten it, Mex. What can I say? I have a weakness. And I played the demo for the second one with the giant monsters, and I was like, I'm kind of over this.
Ah.
Yeah, this is out in August. So, yeah, I mean, you can hear the excitement in our voices as it comes out. And I swear, like, we said this before whenever we mentioned it, I thought this game came out earlier this year already, so... I think
it was supposed to come out
earlier. It was supposed to come out earlier in the year, but... I feel like I thought it came. I feel like this. I think it's one of those games that was just announced forever ago.
Yeah.
And it's just like whatever at this point. Like,
also, you probably have seen it at, like, I don't know, Comic Con or something.
Yeah.
At least I think so.
It's I've seen it at Comic Con. I think I played this last year at New York Comic Con. But yeah, this is sometimes why I think. I feel like you should be careful when you announce games, because I think, you know, if you go on a year and a half, 2 years, it just kind of dries up. Like, I mean, Tomb Raider ended up doing well, but I felt that way with Tomb Raider, where it was announced, and then it took like 2 years from its announcement to come out, and it's like, I've seen this game, it was exciting when it was announced, and then it went a year without nothing, and then it's more, and then it's still another year without release. Anyhow, yeah, that's Capcom. I assume we'll hear more about that in this coming...
I'm actually kind of sad that Swenson is leaving, because he always seemed like one of those guys who was doing his best in the American branch of the Japanese companies.
Yeah.
I think he was a good guy. And he's also basically the only one who was still communicating with fans of Monster Hunter about the possibility of a game actually coming, but when no one else was. So, yeah.
Yeah. Then we had the Microsoft corporate shuffle, which I think is irrelevant to us for the Xbox One president. Well, I should say the president of Microsoft's entertainment unit and hardware. Lady whose name is Yarsin something?
Oh, right.
She's the one who was responsible for Windows?
Yeah, she used to go and do press for, like, tablets and Windows 8 and stuff like that. Yeah.
The perfect fit?
I feel like at this point Microsoft doesn't... I mean, like, it's very... you know, we can't say anything permanent. Julia Austin Green, there we go. We can't say anything really with this. I mean, you don't know what type of impact this is going to have. And the world is a kind of emotion already, but it does seem like an odd pick, especially being that they did have an Xbox division they could have promoted up from.
Yep.
But, we shall see. They have 4 months. Maybe she'll come in with some type... Well, I feel... and I don't know enough about Microsoft. I just feel like from experience with some of their, you know, products, their, you know, their OS, their Surface Tablet and stuff like this, it's like they're a company without a direction right now. Like they're just, they seem to be playing follow the leader right now, which is really odd for them. Like they're trying to catch up in every sector of technology, either behind Apple or Google or something like that, and that seems really odd for them.
Microsoft's a weird place right now.
Yeah,
especially.
From what I understand, and I hope you know this changes, I hear it's a very competitive atmosphere between departments.
Yeah.
Which is really a healthy design.
That's what I've heard as well. A lot of tech blogs are always reporting about, like, the divisions are not really working together, but more or less against each other. And that's why weird stuff happens sometimes at Microsoft with, why is this good thing happening here, but not in this other division? Well, because they want to find their own solution and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I can kind of understand that keeping like that inter-office competition going helps in, you know, making sure people are on top of their game and stuff like that. But it does kind of hurt you when you're, you know, you're kind of pushing out 15 different agendas from several different areas. And, you know, it's just a waste of resources and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. I mean, I wasn't 100% clear on the full details because I think Game Informer had also said that they were splitting up the details between the hardware and the software. Or, no, not the software, the OS.
Ah, okay.
And then there was somebody else who was doing talent relations, but I don't know if that was in general or if that's specific for, like, developer, like, you know, third-party developers for gaming consoles or just, like, the people they work with for other things like that. Because they don't make their own hardware.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, yeah, it's kind of curious to see how many different, I mean, again, it's a huge company to do a lot of stuff, but it is so weird that they have so many different companies who should kind of be working in unison. Like, they have an OS department, they have a hardware department, they have a public relations department, they have a, you know, a talent relations department. You would think some of those would be overlapped.
Yeah. But it seems logical, but apparently not for Microsoft.
Yeah, or maybe they have it, and maybe these are just kind of the broad strokes, and maybe there's parts. Yeah, like I said, I don't know enough about the inner working of Microsoft. It just seems counterproductive to an overall company's goal. So that's the corporate stuff. The rest of the stuff is all game related. This is kind of like you folks got this a couple of weeks ago. We just got it this past week, so it counts for us now. The 3DS Street Pass was updated this past week.
Okay, so, like, what happens with that? So, we can now street pass with people who, from a certain point, like, they have points set up?
Well, no, I think that's going to be something that, I don't know when that's going to roll out, but they have that coming. This is more like they've added stuff to Street Pass now. So, there's four new Street Pass games that you have to buy.
Oh.
One's like an arcade shoot 'em up. I think one's like a puzzle mansion game, one's a gardening game, and one's kind of like a tactical RPG of some sort.
Like buy with real money? Buy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's $15 for the four of them. I think it's $5 for each one individually. I've heard nothing but good things about them from like a four chain from people who bought
them. I don't think all of them are on equal footing.
I don't think so either, but I do think that the idea of giving you four of them, it makes more sense to say, like, okay, if I'm going to buy two of them, I might as well just go for the package.
Yeah, but like I said, if you have the option, I think the best one's supposed to be the shooter and this one that's more like a dungeon crawler as well. Those two are the best ones, I think.
Yeah, it's figure out because we actually have, I think, much better names too. They're called Me Force, Flower Town, Warrior's Way, and Monster Manor.
Monster Manor, yeah, that's the other one that's supposed to be pretty good.
So yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's worth checking out. I'm glad they're kind of supporting the Street Pass stuff. It's been one of my favorite parts of the 3DS. There's also three new puzzles because God knows whenever I'm almost complete, they add more puzzles. And I'm always happy and frustrated because it means I have to do it again. but I would complain if I finished it and there was no new one. So, and I also think it's a great way to kind of promote their games without investing too much money. Because usually you get a new one for every new game that they release on either the 3DS or the Wii U. And this is something I've mentioned before, and I think this is something that I still really confuses me. Is at times I feel like the 3DS and the Wii U are made by two different companies.
Yeah.
Because yeah, the 3DS gets this amazing support on the OSF where you get, you know, Street Pass, Spot Pass, Swap Note, all these great things that add to the experience that gives you a reason to use the system when you don't want to use it in anything. On the Wii U side, we haven't gotten anything substantial since April, and that was the Street View thing. We had to pay them to use it anyhow, and the demo was a pre-recorded video.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea, but I think it would have, it's an idea I think they should have used for other things. And then, you know, like the 3DS is doing well with demos, and this isn't in news, but like they announced this week that they're doing a Pikmin 3 event at GameStop on the 20th and 21st in North America, which is a great idea. I think those are fantastic. Get it out there, get people lined up. You kind of build some type of buzz with the crowd. But then no word about actually releasing the Pikmin 3 demo on eShop. And I understood, I was all with it for E3 because those builds are, you know, months away, years away at times, and they may not be stable. You don't want them crashing systems at home.
Yep.
But I assume if Pikmin's doing a demo, especially being that Pikmin just came out this weekend in Japan, that this is the final game, you can cut a demo out of that to put on the eShop that should be able to run stably.
Probably.
But yeah, they didn't do that, so it's, I mean, maybe they announce it, but at this point they kind of need any type of goodwill they can get from fans. This wasn't on news because the story's kind of a non-fact at this point, but there was the whole thing with Evo this past week.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Nintendo.
Where it was, well, you see, we still don't know the full story, and I don't want to make this like a defense, but, I mean, they didn't make an official statement either way, so it's kind of like, you know, like, we heard one side of the story that they were blocking it, but you don't know why. Like, I mean, I understand where they're coming from with this stuff. Granted, it's really stupid to do at this time. Like, they seem to be really partial to brand protection and IP management, which is fine for a company that, you know, lives on their IPs. But it's, they're going about, like, I get it if you're, you know, like, if it's piracy or if it's, you know, like, somebody's making bootlegs. That I completely get. YouTube videos and people playing a game in a tournament, kind of iffy, and it's not really something you should be going after, but it does seem like it's one of those things where Eagles kind of, like, they were given a mandate and they're just kind of following through, but they're not talking with them beforehand, which
yeah.
I guess kind of makes sense because that's why you have a legal department to do this stuff, so you don't have to make all of these decisions, but yeah, it does come off weird and antiquated for them, even more so than most of their decisions.
For me, it's a double-edged, I guess a catch-22, double-edged sword type of thing where, like, why would you go after this? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, no harm done. But at the same time, like, I don't fault them either because, like, who are these people who just talk over somebody else's content to make money on it, right? So, I don't know. Like...
Yeah, and, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, and it's the same thing with Evo. I feel like with Evo and... Again, don't know the full details because Nintendo never really commented on it, is that it seems like, I think their problem is not that it was in a tournament or not even that it was streaming, but I think that part of it was being ran for profit.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, like, I think they're okay with you using their IPs as long as you're not trying to profit off of it because that is kind of sketchy, but yeah, neither here nor there. But yes, like I was going back to the original point, 3DS and Wii U seem to be worlds apart as far as what Nintendo is supporting them right now.
Mm.
And that Nintendo and the 3DS should kind of show... I mean, not that they aren't going to show up in a couple of weeks with their, you know, their game libraries plus getting there, but just, like, stuff outside of the game libraries, like, you know, always constantly having demos of new games, you know, fairly decent eShop updates both on the virtual console and original titles, OS support for a bunch of core features. I mean, the Wii U doesn't even have anything built in that you can really update or play that's enjoyable. Like, I was thinking, like, when Phil was talking about Game & Wario, I think some of the stuff that they have in Game & Wario would have been decent in, like, I think Pictionary on the Wii U on the OS level would have been fine.
Yeah.
I think, you know, some of those games, like, they didn't have to be the full experience, but give people a taste of it so there's a reason to turn on your system. Especially, you know, you can't plan for dry spells on your retail releases, really, but it happened, and there was nothing to fill the gap. There's no reason to turn on your system if you weren't replaying old games. So, yeah, there's that. What else do we have this week? GTA 5 gameplay trailer, which is a big deal because I believe people were saying this is the first time they've released gameplay before the game came out?
No.
Oh, is that right?
You mean for GTA 5?
People were saying that, but I could have sworn they've released gameplay trailers for...
No, no, not for GTA 5.
No, not for GTA 5, but for other GTAs, because people were saying this is the first... But they usually have, like, I mean, they have very stylized trailers for the most part, but they have done gameplay before.
They've done gameplay trailers, for example, for Red Dead Revolver.
I meant for GTA.
GTA, I'm not sure right now.
But, I actually think... I like the trailer, like, the whole narrator. It was it's kind of cheesy, but it worked.
They've doing the same for Max Payne and for Red Dead. It's exactly the same thing.
Oh, I have not watched those trailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
the same lady and everything.
Yeah, it's a very nice touch, though. It's very different for gaming.
I like it.
Yeah, I
actually
do too.
Showing off features and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, and it's doing it in a careful way, and you're getting gameplay, which is always a big deal with me and Troyers. I'm not a huge GTA fan. I prefer Saints Row just because I prefer the zaniness. But I did. I thought the idea of three protagonists was just that you'd alternate in the story. But I do like how they're doing that with kind of each character's being on a mission, and you get to kind of swap between them at points if you at your right. You can do it whenever you want. And I think that's going to be kind of cool. The only thing I'm kind of worried about is how it limits the story. If you kind of like, okay, we have to set up this mission where all three of these guys have to be together here. And we're going to...
As far as I understand, the only time the characters are together are the heists.
Well, that's what I mean, like the missions, though. Like the
There are missions for each and every character.
Okay.
They have their own story, basically. And then they only come together for the big heists.
Oh, okay, I thought it was like...
I actually think that's a good thing, because usually GTA games, I mean, the last game, basically the big problem was... that you had this huge story that was going on for 20 hours for a guy that was supposed to be on a path for redemption. Then you're killing, I don't know, hundreds of people, and that all this is happening to him in, like, I don't know, I think the time is supposed to be like a week, 2 weeks? I don't remember. It's just ridiculous. And I think splitting it basically between multiple characters is kind of a good idea. At least it can work out well, if they handle it well.
Yeah, I think it's a nice... And like you said, one of the things with GTA 4 East with me was also the variety in missions. And yeah, I think, you know, this adds a whole new dynamic to it. With like, I don't know many games that have you controlling three different characters in the same mission at various points. And, it's kind of cool. Once, like, the example they show was one was a sniper, one's kind of holding somebody hostage, and I think the other ones are pulling off out the window. Yeah, that's kind of cool. So
no, the third guy was on the helicopter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because the crazy guy is, of course, the pilot.
Okay.
The A-team, you know?
Yeah, we're not going to say that GTA does it kind of, okay, with some very similar tropes. I think all of them do, and sometimes they work. Peach is kicking Dr. Mario's ass. So yeah, that's GTA 5. And then we had the huge reveal of this super secret game that Sony was hyping up, and it turned out to be another Ratchet & Clank game.
Which?
Is it a full Ratchet & Clank game?
Yeah.
Okay,
Well, they are saying it's not quite as big as a Crack in Time, but way bigger than Quest for Booty. And they're selling it for $30, I think.
$40.
like a Clock in Time is the absolute best Ratchet and Clank game, hands down. Like that is magnificent. So
it's that, probably my favorite Insomniac game.
Oh yeah, yeah, me too, definitely. But that game's fantastic. So that's why I'm a little worried, like, if this is the successor to A Crack in Time. But it is only for, like, $29, so, you know, I can't expect, like, another A Crack in Time. But,
well,
yeah,
I kind of expect to be at least there from a gameplay perspective.
Yeah.
It might not be as rich in content, maybe, but I would hope that it's otherwise as good.
It's called To the Nexus?
Yeah.
Is that an innuendo for something?
No, I think they said originally it was going to say Into the Nether Realms.
I see.
But they didn't want to go to an innuendo with this one.
I
mean, I think in Europe it's just Nexus.
Alright.
I don't know how we get into. I guess we have to have it explained to us or something. I don't know. the only thing is, I'm excited. I like Ratchet & Clank games. The only thing is, and this, it's a double-edged sword either way, but Sony's really making a great case to keep up your PS3 and not get a PS4 this year.
Yeah, I actually thought, like, oh, it's a PS3 game. I would have rather seen a PS4 Ratchet.
Yeah, and it's Gran Turismo 6, on Two Souls, so there's a lot of major games left out for, and I would say most of them are bigger than the games that they're coming out with that launch, with Killzone and Knack.
And Gran Turismo is one of those games they could have easily pushed to PS4 with just enhanced image quality, and the game would still look pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it's an odd decision. I'm sure. I mean, they're thinking it's probably we'll get those people to buy the system at launch anyhow, and we still have key games. But it's weird that like most of their major franchises are getting sequels this year on their current system.
I mean, it does make sense. They want people to buy PS4s. I mean, people like us who have been with these systems for, I don't know, how old is the PS4 right now?
It's going to turn 7 this year, yeah.
Yeah. We are kind of, at least I am kind of done with the system, and even both games are not going to hold me back from getting a PS4. But, of course, there are still millions of people who don't have a PS4, and it's like great value getting one for cheap and having all these great games still coming out.
I know people who do not want new consoles. Like, people who have the mindset of, why can't this generation just go on forever? Like, I would just continuously buy PS3 games.
Invested $500-$600 into this system.
Yeah.
It makes sense. You don't want to do it again. And, yeah, like I said, there are going to be people who buy it no matter what this year. And there'll be, you know, so that's not an issue. You're not going to sell it to the 75 million people year one. So, you know, it does make sense to keep it going. It's just really weird that so many of their major franchises, you know, we just had God of War. We have Gran Turismo, which is their biggest. We have Ratchet & Clank, which is up there. I would have, you know, and I think what hurts them more is the lack of backwards compatibility with any of the PS3s.
Yeah, if the PS4 backwards compatibility, I mean, it would be totally different for me. I would probably still buy those games.
Yeah.
But now, probably not.
Yeah, so there we go. Is there anything else we missed as far as news goes this week?
Yeah, the Street Fighter thing.
Oh, right, yeah. This doesn't have a name yet, right?
It doesn't have a name yet. The name will be, I think, announced later today when shortly before the EVO Finals of Street Fighter 4.
Okay, so yeah.
There will be a trailer, definitely, for port.
Street Fighter 4 is getting another expansion, which would be the fourth one? It'd be the third expansion, the fourth version of the game.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
This adds five new characters.
Five new characters. Rolento. Elena. No. Rolento. Elena. Poison. And Hugo.
Oh, nice. They're bringing back the Street Fighter 3 characters. That's awesome.
Yeah, and there will be a fifth one who has not been yet in a Street Fighter game. So that sounds like it's an already existing Capcom character, but he hasn't been in a Street Fighter game.
I really want to know what the name is going to be. Have they used Hyper yet for any of these?
No.
They've been cagey about it. It's what they said is it's not going to be called Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition version 2014. That's what's not going to be called.
I was going to go with Super Street Fighter Arcade Edition.
They already have Arcade Edition.
Yeah, but they, I mean, like, is it Arcade? I thought it was Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition.
It is Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition.
Okay, so they go back to Turbo. They haven't used that in a while.
No. So they could go for Turbo, they could go for Hyper.
Or they could go for both.
Oh my.
Turbo, Hyper, they should go with Super Street Fighter 4 1.
I mean,
the thing is, that's also another case, first of all, they're going to release a patch, that's going to be $15, $14.99. Which I think is a fair price for 5 characters, 16 stages.
Is this for all versions or?
It's really interesting what they're doing. Basically, if you already have Arcade Edition, it's $15 to get to the new version. But if you don't have Arcade Edition and just have Super Street Fighter 4, you can also just pay the $15 and get directly to the new version and have all the stuff from Arcade Edition. So we're basically upgrading for cheaper.
That's nice if you are one of those people who still has the original and hasn't upgraded.
Yeah, if you still have a disc lying around and have not downloaded the previous DLC, you can then just buy this and you're up to date. And you can also get, like, for $40 a disc or a digital download, which has, of course, all the content plus all previously released costumes. That's basically the bonus, and all those costumes basically cost also $40, so yeah.
Okay.
So that's also kind of cool that they're doing that. I think pricing wise and stuff it's pretty cool. Just another case of I wish it was also coming to PS4. I mean, maybe they could like do a downloadable version of it for PS4. That would be nice. It's coming out 2014.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we get one maybe in the back half of 2014 for the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Because you know this game is going to be with this another update. It's going to be played for years and years to come in the fighting game community.
Yes.
And if new fighting games come out, of course, for those guys, it would also be easier if you're running tournaments to just have one console where you can run on the new PS4 only games and then also probably maybe this one. Easier for organizing.
It could have also been easier if Sony made PS4 backwards compatible.
Of course. I'm just saying maybe Capcom should think about it.
Yeah, I don't think Capcom's thinking in those terms, though, because didn't Capcom just announce their own fighting game tournament?
I'm not sure. One other thing I want to say, they also said that there will be new gameplay features or something like that, or multiplayer features. There will be other new stuff besides the new characters and the new stages, and I would assume probably also some new balancing. Which is also kind of cool, I think. The one thing I'm still wondering is, though, who will be the fifth character? I mean, they said it's a character we know, basically, but he hasn't been in a Street Fighter game, and I'm kind of almost at a loss who it can be. The only guy I can think from the top of my head who would be a fit is Hagar.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, from Final Fight, because you already have other Final Fight characters in there with Poison and Cody and stuff like that. But otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I saw the video from the reveal of this thing from Evo, and one guy was shouting, like, "It's Mega Man, isn't it?" I mean, I don't think so. Maybe that's more his wish, I guess. Kind of would be cool. At least he would be getting something, Mega Man, right?
Well, he's in Smash Brothers, so I mean, that's cool.
Yeah. Mega Man's in so many things. He's in Smash Bros. Now. He's in Marvel vs. Capcom. He's in Street Fighter vs. Tekken.
Was he in Marvel vs. Capcom
2? No, Zero was.
No. He was in Marvel vs. Capcom 2. That's right.
Yeah, that was a decade ago. Yeah. I think he was in Tatsunoko vs. Capcom, but that was on...
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
So Mega Man is in a whole bunch of stuff, but he doesn't have his own game.
See, we've gotten so many Mega Man games, right, guys?
Maybe Capcom hears the fans and don't want to continue milking the Mega Man franchise, so they're giving him a break. It seems fair. So yes, I think that's all the news for this week. We kind of redid. We started doing this again last week by introducing the questions segment. This past weekend, I kind of got bored looking for. I use Tumblr way too often, and I was looking for a good video game survey and couldn't find one. So I decided to make my own, which you can find on the website. And it's like 34 questions that I 33 questions I pulled from various sources and come up with some of my own. So for the next couple of weeks, we're just going to be answering some. We're going to try to go through most of them. We're not going to do all 33 in one episode. That'd be an entire episode. So we'll try to do like 3 or 4. The first few aren't that difficult, I guess. Name every video game console that you currently own. Doesn't matter how big or small, they all count.
Oh my, wow. Okay, I own a lot. So let's see here. NES, SNES, 64, Wii, Genesis, Sega Saturn, Sega CD, Xbox 360, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3, what do we got here? Wii U, 3DS, DS, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, Game Gear, Atari 2600, and then PS3, I said 360, PSP, and I think that's it. Maybe I'm missing something.
Oh, I don't know what you could be missing at that point.
But yeah.
Now, how many of these do you actually use? Are you a collector?
How many of these do I actually use?
Yes.
Like, what do you mean? Like,
actually use, like,
on a regular
used...
basis.
Not even
on a regular
basis. Let's just say within the last 6 months.
Okay.
Within the last 6 months, I only use like current generation consoles. I did dabble. Like, I plugged in the 2600 and the NES, the Genesis, the Game Gear, and the Game Boy. Like, I fiddled around with them for like 5 minutes each, maybe like a couple months ago. But yeah. But I am a collector, so like I keep all that stuff.
Okay, fair enough, Martin.
For me, that's quite easy because.
Wait. One more. Dreamcast, I own as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Which you just bought this year, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's quite easy because I don't keep old consoles around. I'm not the collector like that. I actually probably owned all of those he mentioned. I think I did. No, I did not own an Atari, but I think all the other ones I owned at some point. But right now it's just the PS3, and that's probably going away next month as well.
Ah, that's sad.
Well, she has to go sometime.
Well, they don't have to go. You could put them. I'm kind of half Phil, half not. I think I have a version of every Nintendo home console. So an NES, a Super NES, a 64, a GameCube, a Wii, and a Wii U. I don't keep my handhelds. I only have a 3DS right now. I still have my DS. All versions, GBAs, and all that other stuff. PS2, PS3, a half-functioning 360. Well, I guess not functioning. A Dreamcast? I don't know if I still have my Genesis. And I think I have a Sega CD that I I was one of those kids in college who got bored and had extra money, so I used to go on eBay and buy stuff I'd never use.
Yeah.
So I think I have a Sega CD for that. Other than that, yeah, I haven't kept anything else.
I don't have an actual GameCube. Like, I have a Wii that plays GameCube games, but not an actual GameCube.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, and this doesn't count as a system. I guess it's an accessory. Part of the reason I kept my GameCube, well, it's one, I like the GameCube's design. the other thing is I had a GBA player, so that doesn't work on a Wii.
Right.
So I had to keep it for that. So yeah, that's one of the reasons it's around, is so I can play Game Boy games, which I never actually use it for. So yeah, that's my current library, I believe. This is pretty simple. I'm going to skip this because we've answered this at E3. We've answered this. So the second question was, do you plan on buying any new consoles in the future? I think we all have some interest in buying a PS4 or an Xbox One soon.
Yeah.
Does anybody here have any interest in buying a Vita?
I do.
Not
Does anybody have any interest in using their Vita?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll use my Vita when I buy it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and I have an Ouya. I keep on forgetting that I have an Ouya.
Have you paid more of that?
No, I have not.
The fact that you keep on remembering it reminds me that you probably are a huge fan
well,
of it.
The only thing I've seen from the Ouya that seems worth playing is, what is it called, Towerfall?
Towerfall, yeah.
Yeah, that seems the only game worth actually playing.
I keep forgetting about it because it's not in plain sight.
It is tiny.
It's tiny, but it's like behind my TV because my TV stand is already full with current consoles. So the only spot for it was like behind it somewhere. So that's why I keep forgetting that it's there.
Okay. Also, notice that nobody mentioned their PCs.
Oh, yeah.
I have a Mac, so I don't technically have a PC.
Yeah, okay. And the final question for this week is, what type of games do you tend to gravitate towards?
For me, I mean, it's not like I don't like heavily story-based games. I mean, I do enjoy me a good story. I mean, and even the Metal Gear Solid games are some of my favorite games ever. But if I have a choice, almost always go for games that are more driven by mechanics, especially interesting mechanics, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really have a type that I gravitate towards. The type of games I play are so varied and random that it's not like I only go for platformers or RPGs or story-based games or shooters. Like,
genre doesn't matter for me.
Yeah, I don't think that's what Martin was saying. I think he was saying that he prefers, basically, if given a choice between, like, you know, something like Heavy Rain or something like, I don't know, Duke Nukem.
Or XCOM.
XCOM, where it's driven more by...
By gameplay.
More by interactions than it is by story or anything else. And I kind of agree with him. And there's a question on favorite genre later on, but this falls into the same way. This is one of the reasons I've always been keen on platformers. Is I know this is not everybody's bread and butter, but to me, platformers have always kind of, because their focus is usually on tight controls and level design. That's the only two things they have going for them. Other than that, they're pretty simple in storytelling, and that most platformers aren't graphically that pretty. That's not true. They have great art styles. I think, you know, Ratchet and Clank looks great. The Galaxy games look fantastic and stuff like that. But, you know, like because they tend to be unrealistic, they don't really have the comparison to like a Battlefield or anything like that. So, yeah, I prefer games that kind of focus on really tight controls, great mechanics, fun to play, and usually some type of hook that has... That allows me to kind of keep on exploring without feeling like I'm being pigeonholed. And I think, you know, we've had this discussion with Uncharted before. I like Uncharted, but Uncharted doesn't hide the fact that it's usually pushing you on rails.
Yeah.
where I feel like something, even as simple as 2D Mario's, which are literally from going from point A to point B as fast as possible, does make you feel like you have some level of control, because you don't, like, even though it's one straight path, you can, you know, you can go up, you can explore, you can find secret exits, you know, especially with 3 and Worlds, which introduced sign mechanics and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't just like what you saw was what you got. And I feel like certain games don't always get that. Like, it's like, okay, we have this path for you. We're going to make you think like you're doing something with it, but it's pretty much straightforward. Uncharted usually gets beat up for it, but another game I played like that, and I'm a fan of this game, was Enslaved, which really highlighted everywhere you had to go.
I'm a huge fan of Enslaved.
Enslaved is one of those games where that I look at and I'm like, nope.
It's a fun, I gotta fake $10. It's a fun game, but yeah, it literally will highlight on the world map like a red area, that's where you can go. And I believe, and I think Uncharted does this as well, is like there's certain jumps you can't make because the game just won't let you make it, because it's like you're not gonna go anywhere, so you can't jump from here. And that always bothers me. Like, I just climbed up here, why can't I jump back down? Oh no, you can't jump back down because the game doesn't want you to.
Yeah, Uncharted is one of those games I do enjoy, although it's more of the cinematic kind. But
I think the
difference for me there is, I guess, that I actually enjoy the tropes and stuff that Uncharted plays with, and I actually just think Drake and the rest of the cast are enjoyable characters.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. I also want to say, I also think that part of it is that Uncharted does a good job of tying in its cinematic nature with its actual kind of gameplay. Like, you know, it does rely on cutscenes, but a lot of the set pieces and stuff are cinematic in nature. Granted, it doesn't give you complete control. Yeah. But, you know, the one they showed off on Uncharted 3 big time was the ship sequence, and that was pretty much all interactive.
For Uncharted 2,
the train?
The house you were in.
It collapses. Yeah.
Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah. So they're pretty good at tying those two together, which I think a lot of games miss out on. Because there's nothing worse in a game to me than not being able to be part of the cool moments in the game. It's like, you did all this work, but we're going to reward you with a cool moment. No, I want to be that cool moment.
The always cheap cop-out is the QuickTime event.
Yes.
That's what I hate the most. That's also why I complained about Far Cry 3 and the boss fights basically being big QuickTime events.
Unless the game's main mechanic is QuickTime events and they do something cool with it, sort of like Azura's Wrath or Heavy Rain 2 was pretty much just, hey, here's a bunch of...
It's kind of funny because Heavy Rain and Azura's Wrath are pretty much the same game. The reason I prefer Azura's Wrath is because it embraces it with over-the-top nonsense. Where Heavy Rain wants to pretend to be taking itself seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, because Azura's Wrath, you don't really control the character. Most fights usually just are mashing buttons until you get your super move.
It's fun because of the actual gameplay parts of it. You're trying to get to the quick time part of it because the gameplay parts of it aren't that great.
Yeah, but I don't mind it because it's like, what batshit insane thing are they going to do now?
Yeah,
like, exactly. They kill off your main character like twice in the game.
Spoilers.
It's a 3-year-old game that I'm sure nobody's saying right now.
The best part of that game was how well they made it like an anime.
Yeah,
the episode. Did they have like a sponsor at the beginning of the episode too?
They had
credits. Like at the beginning and the end of every episode, they had like the scenes from the next episode. It was really well done. Yeah.
Yeah, which was done well, except for the fact that it annoyed me because it would end with scenes from the next episode and then start with scenes from the upcoming episode right away.
Right.
I don't need both of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Given
the choice, I can't pick between like a gameplay focused game or a story focused game because I like playing both. Like I wouldn't just be able to play like all gameplay or like all story. It has to be like a combination. I don't like playing like one thing for a long period of time, like one genre or one type of game. I need to be mixing it up.
Well, ideally, and this is something that I've written about in the past, is I want a game that kind of ties in the narrative with the gameplay.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we've mentioned this before. I think, you know, Metroid Prime's up there. I think Bioshock does a good job with that. I would even say, you know, like Borderlands, the Batman games. Like, granted, you know, some of those are kind of cheesy, but the audio tapes and stuff like that, that builds a world without actually having to stop the game to tell you everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And that's kind
and
of...
And, yeah, it's, like, a reason... Like, I'll get pretty heavy into some certain MMORPGs and even fighting games, but I don't get as crazy as some people who constantly play them, like, for a million hours. Like, I need to move on at some point, and it's usually around, like, 200 hours max is a cutoff.
Or, like, oh, that's a very short cutoff, apparently.
Hey, for like, an MMO, that is a very short cutoff point.
Oh, that's
for people who... Like, yeah, you really get into those things.
It's really interesting sometimes with MMOs and stuff like that. But also, and this is one of the reasons I never became an achievement whore or trophy hunter, is that I'm kind of one of those people who likes to experience a ton of different games. And I just kind of beat a game and want to move on.
Right. Yeah,
I hear you, but I do like to get everything on games that I'm, like, super passionate about. Like, if I really like it, I will get all the achievements or trophies in it.
Yeah, well, I think you know, that's it. But I feel like that happens to any game I enjoy. It's the same reason, like we mentioned earlier in the show, which is one of the reasons I'm going back to New Super Mario Bros. To use the character star coins.
Right.
It doesn't add anything to the game for me. It's just something, like, I enjoy the level design and it works. It's the same reason why I did it in Borderlands. It's because I had enough, you know, I was having tons of fun in one of the reasons. But most games, it's like, okay, I beat it, and... Especially the achievements, which are just like, find 30 random artifacts we hit throughout the level. Those always piss me off. Or the ones like, use this move 30 times. Which makes no sense. Like, I think Uncharted had one where you had to use melee to defeat like 100 enemies. Which wouldn't be so bad if most of the times you didn't encounter people with guns. So you can't really stop and melee one person when like 5 other people are shooting you.
Yeah. Like, you can bump down the difficulty or whatever to get that.
Yeah. See, but then, and that's where kind of achievements and trophies use me. It's because at that point, then, I'm not playing a game to play for fun. I'm playing a game in a certain way that the game wants me to play it.
Right.
And I think that's two different things for me. I want to be able to play a game how I want to play it and get the achievements for it, not like, again, it could be fun if it's something like, you know, like Martin was talking about a game last week with the fart jump and the alternate visions and stuff like that. That would be kind of neat just to kind of get people to experience it, because it is a fun novelty. It doesn't change the game much, but, you know, it is fun to try this stuff out and have fun with it. But if it was like, okay, you have to play this game with the fart and the black and white filter on the entire game twice... That's, you know, like somebody was saying this weekend, like, it takes, I think, 7 playthroughs to get all the trophies in Shadows of the Colossus.
Yeah, it's ridiculous for a story-driven game, especially, I think.
Yeah, so that's not something I want to do.
Yeah, but that's, I would say that those types of trophies aren't for trophy hunting. They'd be more like, hey, I feel like a year has gone by, I really like Shadows of the Colossus, I feel like playing it again. How about I do something challenging? Because, like, what I used to always do with Final Fantasy, like Final Fantasy VII, whenever I'd beat it again, I would beat it for a certain challenge. Like, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to play this game again. Now I'm going to play it using no materia. So if that game had, like, all these multiple playthroughs, like, beat this game this way, beat this game this way, every time that I wanted to play the game, that'd be awesome. Because I would just, like, have a list of things, of ways to beat the game.
Yeah, but here's the difference, is that you chose that. You decided that was how you wanted to play, and that, I'm okay with that. There are people, you know, there's the reason speedruns exist, it's because people are challenging themselves to beat games as fast as possible. And that's fine. Like, that reminds me, there was one in, I think, GTA 4, where you had to beat the entire game in, like, 25 hours. Or 30 hours, something like that. And
which I think I did anyway.
Well, you see...
Not even trying.
Okay,
well, like, I wouldn't even say that I chose to do it. Like, these are challenges that had already been established on, like, GameFAQs and stuff. Like, they have all this stuff already listed. Like,
But you chose to do it. Like, you didn't have to do it. There's no reward.
Yeah, but you don't have to do achievements either. Like, there are things that you can do one day, right?
But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, like, I'm okay with, like, I choose not to do it, but I'm saying with achievement hunting, that's kind of the stuff you aren't choosing to do. That's why I said I've never become an achievement hunter. I'm not saying I have any issues with achievements and trophies.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, I don't, like, a lot of them, the way they are designed, like, there are games that do it right in their game. You know, like, it was a learning process, especially at the start of the generation. Perfect Dark, for example, was a terrible one, where, like, there was, get 1,000 kills in this mode, get 1,000 kills in that mode. And they were worth like 5 points apiece.
Dead Rising, I think, it also had ridiculous ones.
Yeah, and then there was stuff like King Kong, and I think it was Avatar, stuff like that, which is just like press A and you get like 1,000 points.
Well, King Kong was
Avatar, the game.
Yeah, which is fine.
That's actually something I don't mind. Give me everything for completing the game. If it's story-driven game, I think that's totally fine.
Yeah. The other one I hate is anything that deals with online multiplayer and playing it in a certain way.
Yeah. That's the worst, actually. Because especially if you have, like, team-based games and you actually want to, I don't know, maybe win the game. And you have on your team people who try to get, I don't know, their 50 knife kills or I don't know what.
You know, it's even worse than that. Like in The Last of Us online multiplayer, there's actual in-game stuff that you have to do. And they force you to play, like, you have to use this gun or else, like, half of your camp is dead. So now,
that's
like, I'm in a situation and I'm like, God, I could kill this guy with a pistol right now. He's like right in front of me, but I really need to get these kills with this sniper rifle. So I'm going to load up the sniper rifle and I totally lose the kill sort of thing.
Yeah. Or the other ones that I hate is like get 10 wins in a row in a ranked match, which is fine if you get like 9 and then you get that one person who dominates you. And it's so frustrating, especially if it, with some of these, early in the generation, and still do, assume that they have a much more active community than they are going to end up with.
Yeah.
Like, I think I have, Stranglehold, which has online multiplayer achievements. Nobody's playing Stranglehold anymore.
Stranglehold has multiplayer?
Yeah.
I actually don't remember when it had multiplayer.
Let me
tell you something about the multiplayer.
I got James Bond Bloodstone, because I'm a Bond whore.
And that also had multiplayer?
Yeah, that had multiplayer, which I literally played it once. I spent 20 minutes. This was like the first day it came out. I spent 20 minutes trying to find a game. I got into a game. It wasn't even full. It was awful. It's like a really bad third-person cover shooter. I played one game. I'm like, and I literally packed up the game after beating it and told that the game stopped that day. I'm like, I'm never touching this again, why bother?
That's also a good case for a discussion of why everything doesn't need multiplayer or single player.
Yeah, the problem is a lot of people assume that, with multiplayer it's gonna give us younger eyes. But yeah, there are games that literally don't have any purpose with multiplayer, and it's it's just thrown in there. I like to try them out, but I hate those games with those achievements, which you're never going to get. I think we had one, which I was trying to, what do you call when you try to achieve, when you cheat achievements with friends?
Boosting?
Boosting, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we tried to do that with Rainbow Six, with the terrorist hunt and stuff like that, where we just kind of, like, one-on-one just kill each other to get the point. But yeah, those achievements drove me nuts. But I think achievements and trophies is something we can discuss for another day. We are over an hour and a half. An hour, I should say. Is there anything you folks want to say before we begin to wrap?
Another thing that I like about Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed is the fanservice-y Sega past of it all. There's a lot of games that I haven't, like Panzer Dragoon, that I haven't played. And it features, like, levels and stuff, and it makes me want to go back and, like, play all this stuff from Sega's history. And I think that's really cool. I like fan servicey stuff like that in racing games. And
yeah, I do think fan service is something that right now the really major fan servicey series would be Smash Brothers, I guess Sega, for the Sonic All-Star series, because there was a tennis game and there was something else as well, right? Or is it just a tennis and racing game?
I'm not sure what you mean.
They used to have like a Sega and Sonic All-Star series. Like there was a Sega.
Oh, I see.
There was this tennis game, and then there was the racing game. I swear like there was a third one in the series. I could be mistaken.
I'm not sure.
I guess PlayStation All-Stars, Battle Royale, somewhat.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a history lesson on Sony.
It did have its interesting fan service stuff in there.
Okay.
What is it called? Mr. Polygon or something?
Yeah.
As the final
Polygon
boss.
Man.
Polygon yeah. Man, yeah. He wasn't a mascot in Europe, so.
I don't think he was really a mascot. He was a commercial figure.
Yeah. But he wasn't in Europe, so I wasn't sure about the name right now.
Yeah. I think, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom, I think it's up there, but what else is there? Japan has a few of them. I think there's something like Super Robot War.
And they have
Super Robot Tyson is a great series.
Itadaki Street. Itadaki Street or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah. Fortune Street.
Fortune Street, yeah, that's right.
That's the American name for the most recent one. But you don't get a lot of them, and, you know, I think we're at that point where we have enough rich history to, I've mentioned this as far as comics go, I don't think I've mentioned this on the show, but I'm a huge fan of the current crossover between Sonic and Mega Man in the comic books.
Oh, yes.
Wait,
yeah.
What?
That sounds awesome.
There's a Sonic and Mega Man crossover in,
Archie
Comics, yes. And when you think about it, like, it seems really weird, but when you think about the history, it's very similar. You know, they both have evil doctors as their main antagonist, which is kind of how it comes together. Dr. Wily meets Dr. Robotnik, and they robotize Sonic friends, so you get like Knuckles Man and Tails Man and Shadow Man and stuff like that. Granted, you authorize how bad the Mega Man naming scheme is, just adding man to everything.
There are a couple of women.
There's women too. But
okay, one.
It's a lot of characters. It's like the Freedom Fighters. It's and then they have characters from both worlds. They have Proto Man, and they have all the Sonic friends and the friends from the animated series and stuff like that. So it's very interesting because it does pay. It pays homage to both franchises more than either companies are doing right now for them. Especially
Mega Man. Wanted some sort of Konami, a Capcom versus Konami game or something.
They did a Konami kart racing game, but I think that it was iOS only, and that actually had a bunch of fan service in it. It had like Goemon in it, and
oh, that's so awesome!
Yeah, I don't know if it came out on consoles. I'm not quite sure. Would have to look that up.
Yeah, it's interesting, but yeah, I recommend reading it. It's actually it's one of the crossovers that I've enjoyed more in comic history recently, just because it's a very different crossover than supervillain and superheroes, and it's actually very lighthearted, which I think comic books don't do very often anymore. Like everything has to be dark and gritty and all this other stuff. So
are the Sonic comics lighthearted now? Because when I was reading them, they were pretty dark.
They're dark sometimes. Like they do have their elements, but at the same time they're very they're very lighthearted. Sonic's a very goofy character, but yeah, they do deal with some seriously messed up issues.
Oh man, like back in the 90s, there was some crazy stuff going on. Like deaths of major characters happened in that comic. I remember like Sonic went to jail for killing Sally Acorn, and then he had to break out of jail, and then this was part of the Endgame series, and then he killed Dr. Robotnik, and then that character was no more. It was so crazy. It was so crazy.
Yeah,
a lot of crazy stuff happening in the 90s in comics. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Sally right now got the Metal Sonic treatment, so she's kind of like an evil high old version of herself.
And then when Eggman starting being the most popular name to call Robotnik, they put him in as a character. Like, they didn't redo, they didn't say, oh, his name was Eggman all along. They like made him a new character, and Robotnik was a different character. But they're like part of the same family, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think his name's something like Eugene Robotnik or something like that. Aw, poor Sheik.
Or no, Ivo Robotnik in the comics.
Oh yeah, Ivo. Yeah. So it's very fun. It's. I do think we need more of that stuff. I think the problem with it is fan service is a lot of these games. I think a lot of games, a lot of companies just don't want to risk it if it doesn't sell well. But yeah, because I mean, Sonic and Mega Man in comics form works, but how do you do that in games? One's about really going fast, and the other one's about really meticulous platforming.
Yeah.
So it's a very confusing thing. But yeah, if you haven't, check it out. It's well worth it. Check out the website. Like I said, we have this video game survey up on the site if you want to fill it out. We have some people who emailed me, including Daniel, probably should have read his answers. We've had people fill it out on the website, on Tumblr and stuff like that. I think Phil has a review of Game & Wario coming out soon.
Yeah.
He also wrote we didn't mention anything about Ryan Davis, who passed away this week.
Incredibly sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
34.
And it's just like 4 days after his wedding or something.
Yeah. He got married at the start of the month.
Yeah, it breaks my goddamn heart. It really does.
Yeah.
It was nice.
Me as well. I really like the guy and watching his videos and hearing him on the podcast and stuff like that. I really liked him that way. I never met him. I think the Giant Bomb Crew never went to Gamescom. Otherwise, I probably would have tried to meet him at some point. But, yeah, just really sad. I mean, I never got being sad for public figures, I guess. But that's one that really got me. I mean,
yeah.
I probably have been following him since, I don't know, 2000 or something. I mean, that's like 13 years right now. That's a long time. And yeah. And the circumstances as well are just, I don't know. I
know, it's so tragic. Like, it's that's the most tragic thing. Like, days after his wedding on his honeymoon. I wrote a piece up on, it's on the site right now. I poured my heart into it. I was a huge, huge fan of Giant Bomb and Ryan Davis. So it's a very, very sad time for that.
Yeah.
And you can tell the Giant Bomb Crew, I mean, they're all very close friends. That's obvious to anyone who watches and hears them. You can tell that those guys are even more, they're just devastated.
Yeah, like, deepest condolences to to his widow and closest family and friends. Like, it's very tough. It's a very tough thing to deal with. And, like, he was a magnificent guy. Like, the video game industry lost something big.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So check that out. Check out everything else you have on the website. And we'll be back next week with our hopeful backlog edition. I guess there's some major breaking news this next week or so. So we'll catch you then. We'll be right back.
Thank you.